Did you know that Dracena Wines now has a wine club? We named it the Chalk Club. Draco is on our label, but Vegas was getting a little jealous, so we decided he deserved to be our club spokesdog. In Las Vegas, betting chalk means that you are betting on all of the favorites. We are betting that we are one of your favorite wineries, so we thought the name was apropos. The club is simple, yet a bit different than most. When you wager on us, we will ship you 3 bottles of wine twice a year, once in April and once in September. You can choose all red or mix of red and rosé. You immediately receive 15% off of all your wine purchases throughout the year, but what makes our club stand out is the progressive discount. Let your club membership ride into the next year. Your discount increases. Each year you parlay your membership, you receive an additional 5% off up to a planned maximum of 25%. Your club shipments are discounted to a flat $15, plus we'll cover your club shipping cost for your second shipment. That's $15 house money in a sure bet for you. So please head to our website, DracenaWines.com, and find out all of the benefits of joining the Chalk Club and how to sign up. We've stacked the odds so that you can get our award-winning wines without breaking the bank. Welcome to Dracena Wines Podcast. Our wines plus your moments equals great memories. I'm your host, Lori, and this is a podcast about all things wine. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Dracena Wines Podcast. For this episode, I posed a question to a group of fellow wine writers. What is the one wine you must have in your cellar at all times? So in other words, what's your go-to wine? The wine that when company comes over, you pull out first because you know that they are going to enjoy it. What's the wine that you have no problem pulling the cork on in the middle of the week? I didn't give them any more guidance other than that. They were free to choose whatever wine, whether it be red, white, rosé, or bubbles, and it could have been at any price point. They just were to pick the wine that they go back to vintage after vintage. Please note, that one of the writers' dialogue was a bit staticky. I did my best to edit, but I am far from being an expert. Heck, I'm pretty far from being highly qualified or really qualified at any level. With that being said, I hope you enjoy the fun conversation. I hope that this becomes a monthly get-together with a rotating group of writers. So if you have a topic that you would like us to discuss, please shoot me an email at dracenawines@gmail.com. And if you wouldn't mind, please give us a 5-star review so that others can find us. Sláinte! Not so much of a smooth start to the very first Wine Writers write-up, but thank you everybody for joining. And my concept here is just to get a whole bunch of us together and just talk about some topic of wine and obviously, to all drink together. So we're going to start off with introduction of our panel. And first up is Jeff Eccles. He is a certified specialist of wine through the Society of Wine Educators. He is a blogger and the host of an award-winning podcast, We Like Drinking, that I do not miss a week of. These guys rock, and I love them. And just for you guys, smoked whale testicles. Yes.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's awesome to be here. I'm ready to drink.
There we go. Next up is Rick Dean, and he is a wedding photographer by day and a wine blogger by night. He focuses on wine, food, and food in Charleston, South Carolina, and the experiences there. And he enjoys learning about wine and sharing his perspective.
Hey, everybody. I'm really happy to be here. And I started drinking a while ago so that I could be nice and ready for this. So looking forward to it.
Next up is John of Tappuccino's. Vino, and he is an online wine retailer. And him and his wife, Irene, founded it, and they specialize in importing and distributing wine from Europe and interesting wine regions in the U.S. The focus is on small family-owned producers with a dedication to making top-quality handcrafted wine.
Hello. Hey, everybody. It's actually great to put actually real faces to names. I've seen everyone's picture and on Instagram, and everybody looks completely different. live and better, by the way, much better. And many of the people on this Google Hangout have actually bought wine from us, so thank you. And I hope when you guys taste it, you enjoy it.
Awesome. And well, I hope I look different and better since my picture is of Draco.
Your snout isn't quite as long as your picture.
And I'm not quite as gray. Next up is my Fresno buddy, Nick. And he is a marketing and brand manager for two wineries in the Pacific Northwest. He began his career in wine down in Argentina, where he did marketing communications for a well-known Malbec producer. He holds an advanced certificate in wine and spirits from the Wine and Spirit, WSET. I now learned how I'm supposed to say that. And is currently in the diploma class, which, good luck. And Nick, what, Nick? He is super handsome and awesome.
Right. I didn't write that part, right?
No, that's all me. That's me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. And Debbie Giaquindo, the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess, is a certified wine specialist and wine location specialist in Port and Champagne. She has a background in travel, radio marketing, and community relations. She is also the author of Tapping the Hudson Valley, chairperson of the Hudson Valley Wine and Spirits Competition, which she graciously allows me to judge every year. And she is a co-owner of Happy Bitch Wines and my co-host on Wine for Bet Street, which is a free monthly wine education program.
Thank you for having me here tonight. I'm looking forward to drinking with all of you.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I drank with you, Deb.
I know. 24 hours?
24 hours. And if you are listening to this, I'm assuming you kind of already know who I am. But I am Lori, and my husband and I, my husband Michael and I own a boutique winery in Paso Robles. We specialize in producing award-winning Cabernet Franc. We are the founders of Cab Franc Day, and in addition to my microbiology background, I am a graduate in the UC Davis winemaking program. So, thank you everybody for joining. And I am so happy to be here with you guys and appreciative that you are taking your Monday evening or afternoon, depending on what time zone you're in, to be with us and to share your thoughts. First off, all right, what's everybody drinking? The most important thing. Debbie, you're all the way to the left in my camera, so you go first.
Okay, so I've got Kunde Sauvignon Blanc.
Nice.
I call this my house wine because it's just easy drinking. It's Magnolia Lane 2016, and I always keep their stocked in my house for company, especially a company that doesn't drink red wine. That's the first thing that I pull out.
Awesome. Jeff?
Yeah, so, you know, you got to have bubbles. So I like... You know, if I'm looking for something for every day or for something I can pull out anytime, I like to go under $20 if I'm talking about bubbles. And so for me, there's nothing better than a little Gruet out of New Mexico. They do a fantastic traditional method, and I just think they hitting it on all cylinders all the time.
That's awesome. Now, I'm not going to lie. I have never heard of them. Debbie was like,
I have.
So I'm going to have to keep an eye out on them. My kind of go-to bubbles is Chateau Saint Michel. They're, you know, it's $13. You can't go wrong with $13, and it's always solid. It's always good, and I can savor the living daylights out of it. It's really good.
the Gruet is typically around 17 or 18, probably, depending on where you're at. But it's a great bubble.
Yeah.
About 17.
They're from France, too.
Yeah, so Gruet and Fee, do we want to talk about it now, or do you
want
to walk
through everybody's
drink? So Gruet and Fee is the French. They're actually in France. And, if I can remember his name, Gilbert was the founder of it. He came over to the United States like in the 50s, I think, and he found that there was other Europeans growing grapes down in New Mexico. And he had always wanted to do something over here. And so in 1984, they started some plantings in New Mexico. He sent his two of his kids over and said, you guys are going to go make wine. They do primarily, it's usually a 70% Chardonnay, 75% Chardonnay, 25% Pinot Noir. So kind of a classic blend. Their first release was 1989, consistently 90 points Wine Spectator. They've been in the top 100 a couple times, I think.
Oh, I've been living under a rock.
What's that?
I said, I've been living under a rock.
Yeah. I mean, I think in, sometime in the 90s, I think they sold a million bottles in a year or something like that. I mean, you should be able to find this just about anywhere. Mm-hmm. They do a rosé, they do a demi-sec, they do a grand reserve, they do a grand brut rosé reserve, and they've got a sauvage brand that's a no dosage, completely dry as well as they do. So,
wow. Yeah, I'm going to have to look them up. Seriously, under a rock, I guess. I don't know. Woo! All right, John, what you got?
I am drinking green tea today.
Nice.
So this is, we live really close, maybe an hour from Wente, an hour and a half on a bad driving day. And I've never been to Livermore. I shouldn't say that. I've been to Livermore 3,000 times. I've never had wine in Livermore. So that's our next conquest. We went to Lodi for the first time a few weeks ago, and my snobby Napa Valley attitude was eroded very quickly. We met some amazing wines and winemakers there, and we're starting to get on the Livermore, so I went out of my cellar that a friend of mine had given me, and it's drinking really nicely. It's really balanced, and it's not super restrained, but it's not super Napa Cabby either. It doesn't jump out of the glass. I think it's just a great drinking Cabernet. I don't have any food with me right now, and it doesn't feel overpowering. So I'm really impressed with it. And it's, again, price-wise, it's about a third of the price of an average Napa Cab. So really impressive.
Right. Yeah, they're solid. They you know you're getting good stuff with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Nick?
So, my kind of go-to, what I always keep in my cellar would be, it's kind of like cheating, but it's Malbec Terroir. So it is their line just above their Classico. So it's about $19.99. And I keep it there, one, because it holds a special place in my heart, but also I love to taste people on it and see if they can guess what it is. And not a single person has ever guessed at a Malbec. Grown up in the Valle de Uco, so really high elevation, super fresh. You're not going to get that super extracted, jammy, flabby, what people think of when they're drinking grocery store, Malbec. So it's really kind of a treat, but I stock up every time that it's available on the West Coast, which is rare.
Under $20 seems to be the hit, right?
Mine's $14.95 or something like that.
Yeah, under $20 seems to be it. And I think it's kind of funny because Mike and I, when we first started getting into wine, like $20, we stood there and, argued with each other. Should we? Shouldn't we? Should we? Shouldn't we? And now, Now we're, you know, $20. Yeah, give me whatever, you know. $20.
I'll take three. Why not?
It's a bargain.
Right.
What's another 20?
Yeah. Right. All right, Rick, what do you got?
Well, I am drinking my go-to, which is a Gilheim. It's a French from Languedoc Rosé. This is the 2017 vintage. It just landed a few weeks ago. And because I live in the South here in Charleston, we really drink rosé 12 months out of the year. And I had the fortunate opportunity to go to this winery when I was in Languedoc a couple of years ago. And I fell in love with it. It's fresh and it goes with every season here in Charleston.
Yeah, I like areas that are rosé all year.
And it's $10.99.
Oh, no, that's a real bargain.
$10.99, a real bargain. I saw it for sale in Massachusetts, and it was $12.99. So, I mean, it's going to be below $15 pretty much anywhere you go.
That's good. That's good.
That's real nice.
Yeah. So my go-to, for people who know me are probably going to keel over in shock that the bottle I'm going to lift up is not the bottle that they're probably thinking I'm going to lift up. So my go-to wine is Pine Ridge Chenin Blanc and Viognier.
Good stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, that is a nice little bottle of wine.
Yes.
It is a great wine. You know, I always have it on hand. I always serve it when people come over, you know, get them in the door, give them something that I know they're going to enjoy while other people are coming. And when I first found this wine, it was like $9.99. And it is now vintage after vintage has creeped up. And it is $14.99 now. And when I was looking them up, they have like this wine, the Chenin Blanc Viognier actually has their own website now. So Pine,
really?
Yeah. So Pine Ridge has their wine for, you know, has their website for the Cabernet and all of that stuff. And then it is actually Pine Ridge CBV is what the website is for this particular wine.
And is that a California wine?
Yes. Yeah. And they source it from all over, so it is legit California.
They're on the Silverado Trail.
Right, right. They actually have vineyards all over now, which I'll get into in a little bit. They have vineyards all over now, but they were originally right there on the Silverado Trail, and now they've kind of sourced out. But I'm guessing if that bottle has their own website, that production.
Got its own Instagram too.
What? Oh yeah, it's on Instagram. Yeah.
And Facebook. Holy cow.
Yeah, it's its own entity altogether.
I'm gonna have to look for that down here. I've never seen it.
Oh really? It's a good wine. Now what I'm saying, those who really know me probably would be assuming I was raising a bottle of Ferrari Carano Fumé Blanc because I am the biggest stalker of Ferrari Carano there is. But I thought I would go, you know, throw a little curveball into it. But I don't know if you can see in the camera. I haven't had this in a while, and I poured it, and it's got bubbles. It's got some effervescent in there, and I don't remember it being effervescent in the past. So, you guys who drink it, it tastes fine and it smells fine, but it's got a little petulance in there. It's got some bubbles, right?
Has it been bubbling consistently since you poured it?
This has been sitting for a little bit. This glass is what's left of what was poured before we got on, so about 40 minutes ago.
Okay.
And there's a few bubbles in there, but not, you know, so they are dissipating. but there are still some bubbles in there. It's still good, but I thought it was interesting. The price keeps going up and up and up. More and more people are finding them.
I don't think I've had anything but that from Pine Ridge, honestly.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I haven't either. In fact, when I went to go look them up, I was like, oh, they're known for Cabernet? I didn't know that.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Not in my house or not.
All right, if you say so, So I'll start just about them. So they actually started in 1978, and they're in the Stags Leap District. And they're known for the vineyard is actually really pretty. Not that I saw it live, but there's all pine trees along the terraced vineyards. So that is where they're getting their name from. But now they're all over. They're in Howell Mountain, Oakville, Rutherford, Carneros. But they do, they are sustainable. They are certified Napa Green. So I always like it when I like a wine and they're certified that way, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's just a little bonus in my eyes. You know, I don't know. How do you guys feel about being certified sustainable or organic?
Personally, I think it's nice, but from the winery side, it's kind of a pain. So as long as they're doing, you know, things that are, you know, can be considered organic or sustainable, I don't care if they go through the red tape of getting that certification.
Would anybody buy a wine specifically because they are, or not because they're not?
No, like it doesn't affect my decision making at all.
I just want to know that they're taking care of the earth.
Yeah, I mean, I like to see it. And I always like it when I find somebody is, you know, performing sustainability in their practice. But I would not, my decision would not go one way or the other based on any of that.
You know, it's interesting. We were in Oregon back in November, and we were staying at Youngberg Hill. And we bought some of the wines, which are now on our website. And we spent a few days with their winemaker. And I asked him if they were organic, and he said he actually is practiced as organic, but not certified, because certified organic is worse than some of the other practices they could use. So, for example, sulfur, you can dump sulfur in the vineyard, and sulfur is poison, and their house is surrounded by the vineyards. His children all live there. They're all under 18. He's got a couple of dogs. He has cows on the property, and his point of view was, I'd rather put something non-organic in the vineyard that would violate the certification than actually be organic and dump poison, toxic sulfur and ruin my children or my livestock or my pets. So for me, it's more about, like Rick said and others have said, you take care of your land. Are you expecting that property to be around 100 years from now? You know, are you people who use Roundup and spray poison, you know, that's a whole different story. But I think organic and natural has as many faults and detractions as anything else does.
And, you know, as a winemaker, it can be limiting, you know, and there's times where you have to make decisions to save your crop or to fix, you know, if something's going wrong, you may have to do something to the wine to try to correct it. And if you're bound by these rules to have this label on your bottle of wine, not to mention the price tag that you have to pay to be able to get that little label on your bottle. You know, if you're a winemaker, you need to do your job. And to me, that certification doesn't trump the work that you need to do.
Right. I agree with that. And I mean, people have such issues with certain things, you know, like sulfur is like, oh, you know, the end of the world with sulfur, you know, and it's people don't really understand what it does and how it works. You know, it's media, you know, it's, you know, they're blowing this huge issue. And they're not really understanding what it does. Go ahead, Nick.
At that point, I would agree with you, Lori. I think that it's great that Youngberg Hill doesn't use it. You know, where I work, we don't as well. But powdery mildew is a big issue in Oregon. And if you're having to deal with it, sulfur's, I mean, yes, I might not want to live right next to a vineyard sprayed with sulfur, but sulfur, technically, it's a natural chemical and it's allowed in organic, you know, winemaking. And so I don't have a problem if it's, if I don't have to, I guess, live in it and breathe it every day, but
right.
Feel like, you know, to me, again, if you are taking care of the earth around you in a responsible way, there are, you know, we all can spend many hours, you know, looking for organic apples or organic bananas or organic wine. And sometimes it matters and sometimes it doesn't. Here, I think it's a lofty goal, and maybe it will be, it is beneficial for that particular winemaker. But if you are not taking care of your land and taking care of your, you know, your winemaker and your people, then it's going to show in the types of wines that you're producing, in my opinion, and it'll eventually come back to bite you.
I agree. Deb, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, you have to do what you have to do to put out a good product. I don't think, you know, the whole biodynamics and sustainability, I think you need that, because I think just because you're growing something, whether it's grapes, potatoes, I mean, you have to put back into the earth what you're taking out too. So you really have to respect it. Is it, do I go out of my way? Does it bother me if someone is or isn't? Not really. You know, I have to like it. I prefer somebody that I know is taking care of the environment. Just, I mean, you know, so many people in years past coming up to where we are now have not. So we are paying for that in many different ways, where we have to start taking care of the environment, other, you know, to leave it to the next, you know, generations thereafter.
So if you were, if you liked your bottle of wine, whatever, but for them to go organic or sustainable, they upped it $1 because it's probably not going to be up to that much. Would you pay that $1 for that?
Absolutely.
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 So, Jeff, I think it was...
Just because somebody is sustainable and biodynamic doesn't mean their cost of producing a product is less expensive than somebody else's.
No. In fact, it's, you know, really not... The production, when you're certified like that, probably is
much
a little,
more.
Well, I'm not sure how much the, cause we're not, I'm not sure how much, additional it is.
I'm not buying your stuff anymore.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But, and you know, and God, Mike would like go ballistic on me. Cause I am a tree hugger. I mean, I am a tree hugger. It's, you know, there's just certain things you know, I don't think the production is so much more money, but the regulation and the document, and Nick, you probably, you know, the documentation that goes along with getting that certification and maintaining that certification and changing the facility to fit the specifications. That's where the money is, not in the wine
Absolutely.
Making.
Yeah.
Nope,
yeah.
Not at all. It's all in that. It's all in getting that label. It's not in what you're putting in the bottle.
I mean, you're putting a great wine into a bottle. You're taking care of the earth. I'm speaking to you, Lori. I mean, you're taking care of things, right? So having the certification or not is not going to determine whether or not your customers purchase your wine. To me, you're a responsible winemaker. So that's what's
right.
important.
Right. And we do, we try, we do everything we can, and, you know, we do as much as you can, but there's no way I would ever see myself going through that rigmarole. There's enough, there's enough red tape and paperwork and everything for everything else to do that. But I get how a lot of wineries want to do it so that they stand out from others. But that was why I was asking that question is you've got, you know, this Merlot and this Merlot, they both got, you know, 92 in Wine Spectator. This one is, you know, organic certified and bio, you know, certified, and this is not, same price, everything. Do you pick this one because everything else is equivalent, but they're bio?
I pick both, and I would do a comparison.
I pick the one that tastes better.
Yeah. And just because they're both 92s doesn't mean I'm going to like either one of them.
That's a good question for a write-up right there for exactly. Wine Writers Roundup there is, you know,
I will tell you, at one of the wine stores that I go to frequently here in Charleston, this was many, many years ago. We walked in and the owner of this store knows her customers. And I walked up to a bottle of wine that on it, I'm going to out myself here and say, I liked the label. Okay.
Nothing wrong with that at all.
I liked the label. I picked up the bottle of wine and the wine store owner saw it and she said, is that for you or is that for Gary? And I said, it's for me. And she said, then put it back. You will hate it. And I said, yeah, but I read about it and it got this huge score. She goes, I'm telling you, put it back because you're going to hate it. Or buy it for Gary and then taste it and you'll see that I was right. And she was absolutely right. I hated the wine. It was not my palate type. It was not my preferences. It was everything about a wine that I typically didn't like at that point in time in my life. And it had this outrageous score that didn't mean anything to me.
Right. I get it. So let's go back to what initially I was thinking in terms of what your wine is. Debbie, do you want to talk about the winery a bit? You got any info on them?
Sure. Let me pour myself some first.
Absolutely. Can't talk about it with an empty glass.
I know.
Haven't poured any yet?
Oh, no. I'm sure Debbie has emptied the glass.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm doing this really wrong if that's what we're supposed to be doing.
I came home, had a glass.
I'm going to have to go back for another bottle here in a minute.
This is my third. Cooney was, I'll tell you how I got introduced to it, was a winery. Went out to California for a friend of mine's wedding. We went to her house. We got off the plane, went to her house. She packed us with a picnic basket and sent us on our way. And she said, you have to go to Kundi. So it was Paul and I go up to Snow, but we go to Kundi. And we really liked it. And obviously, there's Sauvignon Blanc. So it was just one of those wines that grew on us. And I just love it. And people that come, you know, that's our house. Our house white, I guess I would say. So Kundi's been around for a really long time. I don't know if any of you have been up there to Kundi. It's right by, I hate to say, it's right by where the fires were.
That doesn't really narrow it down.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a pretty big plot.
They have an awesome, awesome cave. Really, really cool cave. But Louis Kundi immigrated here from Germany. And he purchased what was called the Wildwood Vineyards Ranch, and it's on red volcanic soil, and it was actually first planted in 1879 by John Drummond, who imported cuttings from Chateau Margaux and Lafitte Rothschild. So as life gone on, when he passed away, it was taken over by his sons, and then a couple of his sons were drafted, but even today, it's still within the family, I believe. Fifth or sixth generation, they have, let me see how much they have. I think 1,000 acres parcel.
Wow.
And within their whole parcel that's around their vineyard or around, you know, the tasting room, whatever area, they all have different microclimates within it. So it's kind of really cool. They're bonded winery number 202. Anything else?
Which means what?
That means that they were the 200
and second winery to be bonded
in California.
Okay.
I mean, they have a great, I don't know if you did the mountaintop tasting, but they have a tasting at 1,800 feet with these sick views of Sonoma Valley. They usually pour a couple of whites and the rest reds, and they take you on a very long tour in sort of a weird Jeep-type vehicle, and it's a real blast. It's about $50, but just a lot of fun on a beautiful summer day. It's so cool up there, both for life, fun, cool, weird Jeep-type vehicle, and it's...
Yeah,
just a blast.
Yeah, all those different micro or macro climates, I get them confused, within the whole vineyard and everything, which really makes it pretty unique.
All right, Jeff.
And they have good red wines too. I mean, their whole portfolio is pretty good.
Jeff, do you have more on this wine that I've never heard of? That apparently I'm the only one on the face of the earth who hasn't.
You know, not a lot. They've got facilities in Santa Fe and Albuquerque, New Mexico. A beautiful, you know, great, lots of green apple, lots of minerality, just a beautiful nose. I just really enjoyed this bottle of Bubbles.
I have to honestly say, I don't think I would. I don't. My brain doesn't go to New Mexico for grapes. I know it's there, but I don't really. It's not in the forefront of my brain.
You don't think of it as a Pinot Noir safe haven. You know, I think when you're there, I don't know exactly how it works, because I agree. You think of New Mexico as more of like, you know, the Arizona desert, you know, but it may have something to do with altitude. Or just with how they grow their grapes. I don't know what kind of, canopy management they use. But it's also Bubbles. So, you know, they're able to blend. Then it sits on lees for, you know, generally with these are 2 years on lees before they're going to be releasing them. You know, so there's some work that the winemaker can do to get it right. But he found the conditions he wanted in New Mexico, and I've had Vivac out of New Mexico. They do some fantastic wines. I've had other wines from New Mexico, and there are some really good wines coming out of New Mexico.
So,
well, and keep in mind that in New Mexico you've got some really skiable mountains. I mean, the mountains. And they've got the desert. So somewhere in between all of that, you're going to have this opportunity to grow grapes.
Yeah, there's good altitude out there that they can use with. And, you know, when you're looking at that kind of environment as well, you're talking huge potential diurnal shifts that are going to allow that sugar to come up during the daytime, but then that sugar is going to plummet and the acidity is going to rock it up at night. You know, so you've got some play there with the grapes and what they're going to be able to do and how they're going to be able to struggle and you know, what they can produce.
And because it's New Mexico, you're going to get it at $17 or $18.99.
Exactly.
$30.99 because it's coming from California.
Now, Jim, did you have some, you had a New Mexico winery people?
Yeah.
We like drinking, right?
Yeah, Vivac Winery. We had them on. Michelle, they had some. Oh my God, they had some fantastic wines that we were drinking on the show. They shared it with us for everybody on the show, and just some beautiful stuff that they're producing there. I was really surprised by it because it was a lot of reds. I can't even remember the name of it. There's a grape I'd never even heard of before, something out of Italy that they'd found grew really well in their environment, but they're talking a much higher elevation than, you know, what most of us are used to. I think, you know, over 6,000 feet possibly as far as what they're growing grapes in.
Oh, wow. Holy cow.
Now I'm going to have to go look it up because they're probably, I'm probably about to get an email.
Yeah. Oh, they are on live chat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So John, what do you got for us? What winery info you got for us?
Well, first, I have to say I have a microphone envy from Jeff.
Well, you got to be careful what you ask for because that microphone attacks. So.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
But anyway, impressive, I will say. So, you know, just to put things into perspective, I think, so we talked about Bonded Winery 208 or 288 or whatever it was. So Wentzie was
202.
Wentzie's like 860, and they were bonded in 1883. So Buenavista, the first winery in California, bonded in 1857. Good Luck Bunchu was bonded in 1858. They were number two. So whenever Kunde came on, there were two, whatever you said, 208. And then we have 8-something Wednesday. So Wednesday claims to be the longest operating, never closed family winery in the United States. So they didn't close for prohibition. They weren't destroyed by phylloxera in the 1800s. So they've been making wine for a very long time. Most of that wine was bulk wine, sold to companies like Gallo and so forth in the early days. They made a little bit of their own wine. I think it's really in the last 30 years where they have started producing wines, significant amounts of wine on their own label. Still, if you look at their impressive list of employees, it's Wentzie everywhere. I mean, just like it is at Kunde, just like it is at, which I think mostly it's the Bunchus, not the Gunlocks that are running around at Gunlock Bunchu. But they've managed to keep the family in the winery operation. So I think they're on a fourth generation winemaker right now. So really impressive winery. I think we were talking about prices. I don't buy a lot of $20 wine because I live in Napa. when we first moved here, we were drinking a lot of Spanish wine because that's what we grew up on. And $20 is a really decent Spanish wine. We had so much sticker shock the first 2 years. We went places and, you know, a really average cab might be 80 or 90 and 100. Then after a while, 2 years later, we were like, oh, that cab's $70. I wonder what's wrong with it. so that's the sort of the bad thing that happens to you. And then people would tell us about Washington cab and we would laugh and then we would taste it and think, oh my God, it's just as good as anything else. And that's what I feel about this Wentzie wine. So obviously they've been doing it for 130 years or so. They've been doing it in the same family, in the same set of traditions. They have a region they have great soil there. It's also a region that has the diurnal shifts that Jeff was talking about, where it gets really hot during the day, but because they're in that valley, it also gets really cool at night. So that actually has a really good benefit, and they have a tremendous amount of wind that blows through there. So it creates a dynamic, I think, that's really unusual. So I'm going to run down to Livermore sometime this spring. If you guys know Kent and Robin from Appetite for Wine, they were there this last weekend, and they were raved about it, and they posted some great pictures and some stuff on Facebook and Twitter. I've got to get down there because the wine is really high quality, but it looks like the tasting experiences are what Napa used to be maybe 25, 30 years ago, where it's relatively inexpensive but really open, where you get to meet the winemaker, and those are the kind of experiences we really like.
I've been to Wentzie. I went to a concert there.
Cool.
Who'd you see?
Yeah, right. So
who did I see? I saw REO Speedwagon, and then me and REO Speedwagon, the band members, went and tasted in the tasty room.
You were tasting with the REO Speedwagon.
I was tasting with Kevin Cronin and Dave and
Nice.
Okay, I'm reaching out to touch you.
I don't think that's how the internet works.
I have pictures. I'll have to dig them up.
Yeah, we all have pictures. It's just what we're using them for.
So my brain automatically goes right to Friends because it's on TV all the time and I can do every episode of it. But that just made me think of the episode where they went to go see Hootie and the Blowfish. Right? And they're like, is that a hickey? Who did that? That would be the work of a blowfish. So Debbie?
No, I
was Paul with you?
No. My girlfriend from California I was with.
Speaking of Hootie and the Blowfish, do any of you know which member of Hootie and the Blowfish is part owner in our winery?
Darius Rucker?
It's the only name I know.
I don't even know his name.
The other guy with the long hair and the thing? Yeah.
Long hair, that never.
Long hair and the thing, I don't know. But it's the bass guitarist. I just went to a wine tasting and he's part owner of, and they're in Sonoma County, actually.
Oh. Yeah. There's quite a few rockers. Train has their own winery now. And yeah. I saw Train and Hootie together and sat next to Darius's mother.
Oh, there you go. I think it's the lead singer from Tool has a winery down in Arizona.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them. You know, they've got that money, and you know.
I was just gonna say, you got to do something with the money, buy a winery.
Yeah. So I got to bring it back because I got to see if you guys know it. So the Vivac Winery I was talking about before. So Aglianico, theirs is spectacular. But then the one I'd never heard of or had before was a Refosco. I don't know if you guys have heard of that grape before, but I had never heard of it.
I just had it.
You did, really? Who was making it that you had it?
Mathiasen.
Oh, really? Okay. Just saying. Him and I, college together.
Yeah. Nice.
So that was the first one I'd ever had, and it was – of all the wines we tried that night, the Refosco was by far my favorite. Such an interesting wine.
Nick, you're studying now, so you know that one?
You know, I have not tried one before.
No.
My brain is like, I'm ready to explode right now. So stop naming, like, grape varietals. Like...
Aww. I feel bad for you. I really do. You sent me that piece of paper, and I'm like, nope, I'm done. Nope, we're done.
Right.
And you're going for level 3. Is that right? Which? What are you going?
Diploma.
Oh, diploma. Oh my word.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw that. You guys know that Amber and Dave from formerly Napa Food and Vine, now Wine Travel Eats, they're in London, and they just took the WSET1, and their description of the exam, I feel like I wouldn't even need to study for it and go in and pass it. It's like questions like, which of these is the red grape variety? It's like Sauvignon Blanc, Albarino, something, and Cab.
Yeah, Refosco.
Watch that. When I take it, that'll be on the exam.
Yeah.
You're going to go, I didn't even know that was a grape.
All right, Nick, what about your guy, your special wine?
All right, so again, Altos Las Hormigas.
You say that so well.
Oh, thank you. I probably say it really well just because that's the winery that I actually cut my teeth on working in the industry. Moving down to Argentina, founded in 1995 by Antonio Moriscalchi and Alberto Antonini. Alberto Antonini is a famous Italian winemaker who does consulting around the world, even like Segesio and Sonoma. He's their consulting winemaker. The name Altos Las Hormigas, it used to be Altos Las Medrano, which is the town where the actual bodega is at. But when they planted the vineyard, all these little ants started to eat the baby vines. So, and all the field workers basically said that the ants owned the land. So what they did is they spread little ashes, little ant ashes around the vineyard to kind of detract them. At which point, once the...
Wait. Ant ashes? Like, mm-hmm. They burned ants and spread their ashes, like, in a burial?
You can actually purchase, like, ash insects to attract insects. It's natural. It's organic.
Look, they're organic.
It's organic.
It's like a warning, right? It's like a warning.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so...
saying it's organic, Nick, that's okay. We're going to go with it.
But that is how they decided to change the name to Altos Las Hormigas, because the ants really own the land there. So they have the couple vineyards down in the Luján de Cuyo area, but then up in the Valle de Uco, we're talking 4,000 to 6,000 feet elevation, vineyards in the Altamira, Vista Flores, and Gualtajiri area. That's where Gualtajiri, Chupingado area is where this particular wine comes from. A lot less of the limestone soils that they particularly like to use. It's more gravel, so free draining, but the vintage that I'm drinking right now, first time I've actually had this vintage, it's 15. Tastes a little young right now, and that's because they actually harvested about 15 days earlier. And that's because the heat in December, January was super hot. And they're trying to go away from that extracted jamminess. So they picked early. It's really coming together. Nice, you know, red fruit, ripe acid. Not, again, not what you expect from a Malbec. And one thing I love about Argentinian Malbec, especially from smaller producers or ones that you can actually find there and not here in the States, it's like a $20 bottle drinks like a $40 bottle. $50 bottles, you're getting, you know, something equivalent to California $100 bottle. And so this was aged 50% in stainless steel, 25% in concrete, and 25% in foudre. Oh, and they use Pedro Parra, who is a terroir specialist who travels around the world digging soil pits and working with wineries to talk about their soils. So, you know, when they talk about their terroir, they know what they're talking about. So that's my shameless plug for a winery that I love.
Near and dear.
Exactly.
Love it.
Hey, Nick.
All right, Rick, what you got?
All right, well, like I said, I'm drinking the Moulin de Gassac Gilheim Rosé. This is...
it's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. The name of the winery is Dumas de Gassac. It's the Gassac Valley in the Languedoc. And if you're picturing France, folks, you know, you've got Provence over to the west, or to the east, and you've got Languedoc over to the west, that actually go butts up against Spain. And this winery is not that, you know, they're kind of like right at the beginning of Languedoc. So when we were staying in Provence, it was just an hour's drive over there. The first vines were grown in this valley in the 8th century. So there have been vines growing in this area for centuries, of course. Charlemagne was involved in making sure that they were well taken care of, etc. But we're going to fast forward from the 8th century all the way up to the 1970s when Ami Ibert, or Gilbert, Ibert in French, and Gilbert in English, bought the land. He and his wife bought the land. They were looking to slow life down. He was a leather tanner, bought the land, and fortunately for him, had a friend who was a geologist, a well-known geologist in France, and he came and studied the soil and said, you have to buy this farm, and you have to plant grapes because this soil has property, you know, it's glacial properties that they wish they had in Bordeaux, making some of the best, you know, Grand Cru Bordeaux in France. And so they bought the farm and immediately started planting grapes. They brought in some grapes some varietals from Bordeaux, and they make excellent, excellent wine. But the thing about this particular wine that we like so much is it's classic French rosé. It's crisp. It's 50% Syrah, 50% Carignan, which is not the typical provincial rosé. But this, I mean, it's bright. It's got flavors of strawberries and melon and Asian pear. And it just works all year long for us. But it's hot here all year long, pretty much. And, you know, it doesn't hurt that when you travel thousands of miles and you get to go to the winery and you're walking in their fields, you tend to get an affection for them. And at a $10.99 price point, it's something that is very easy to just have in your cellar and drink it throughout the year. We had just finished our 2016 vintage about a month ago, and so we had a little bit of a lag. We were, you know what I was saying, we were drinking rosé remnants that we could find in our cellar. And cellar means one of many wine freezer or refrigerators that we have. It's a great wine. They're great people. For every day, I love $10.99.
$10.99 is good.
Yeah, you can't beat that.
Yeah, that's a six pack. That's a case right there at $10.99.
Honestly, I don't know how they make it and sell it so that we can buy it for so little.
Yeah,
it baffles me. It absolutely baffles me. I mean, I can close my eyes and picture their cellar. I can picture their tanks. And how are they selling this to us for $10.99? We don't know, but it's great.
Doesn't it always like baffle you between the cost of the bottle, the cost of labor, and everything, how the price is?
Let me tell you.
It does.
From our end, it blows my mind when I see a $7.99 or a $10.99 bottle in a store, because there's absolutely no way I can get anywhere near that, you know.
And then when it's shipped and, you know, coming from imported on a container ship.
Right. And come on. And John, now you know that aspect of it, the importing of it. Like, I mean, how long, when you take a wine from out of the country, how long is that in, customs, whatever?
Customs.
Yeah, thanks. Customs. Like,
we'll clear customs usually the same day, but the wine, so we have to go from the winery to a port. So, for example, our Croatian wine has to drive all the way around Croatia through Venice, down the coast to La Spezia. That's $500 for 1 pallet. Then the wine has to get on a giant container ship that comes to New York. That's $1,000 for 1 pallet. Then it's, believe it or not, the truck. Thank you, unions. The truck from New York to California, that's another $1,000. So when I look at, I was at Whole Foods the other day and I saw Sauvignon Blanc from France for $4.99, and I almost tipped over the display. I was like, this is absolute bullshit. It's not fair. That was French, by the way. That was French.
Okay.
Just bleep it, you know, just bleep it.
So I think about, like, I know that it costs me about $3 and something a bottle for the entire shipment on a pallet. Now, these guys are shipping more than a pallet. But $4.99, honestly, my guess is they shipped it in bulk in a giant bladder somewhere on a ship where it was probably 30 cents to ship the wine, and then they rebottled it in the United States, a lot of these wines. I don't think anything under $10 can be a quality bottle with non-bulk shipment, just because it's impossible. I mean, just the taxes that are paid per gallon, just the taxes and excise and duties that when you enter the United States, it seems unlikely to make it. So it's frustrating for us because, you know, I can't get a wine from Italy that I buy for $4, I can't sell it for less than about $15 just for the cost of getting it here. So when I see a $9 wine, I think, my God, what am I missing?
What did they have to do to get it there?
Yeah, exactly. Now, sometimes it's scale, right? So if you're selling 1,000 cases or 2,000 cases or 5,000 cases of some wine, then maybe it's 30 or 40 cents a bottle. But still, a $4.99 Sauvignon Blanc is pretty hard to fathom where that price could have come from, even for people who don't have to pay a mortgage on the property because their family's owned it for 1,000 years. And I mean, just the cost of production has got to be more than $4.
So that's interesting. That's really interesting, John. So Rick, on your wine, does it say anything about if it was bottled, on location, or does it have any kind of information about where it was bottled?
It was bottled in France.
Yeah,
it was. Okay.
Yeah, it was absolutely bottled in France. I mean, we were in their facility, which is, in an old mill. It's astonishing to me that it can be sold for so little.
So
I mean, and $10.99 used to be, if you go look back in my wine life, there was a time when $7.99 was, oh, I'm not paying any more than that.
Right.
And then it was $10.99. Well, now it's, it's whatever I want. And it's not because I, am rich. It's because I value what's in the bottle. And this, I know that if I'm looking at a $4.99 Sauv Blanc, I don't care where it's from, or a, $6.99 grocery store wine, I'm not, I'm just not going to buy it. But thankfully, in my case, this particular wine, it's like I understand its entire provenance from vineyard to my home. And that's just quite it's a value that unfortunately for you, John, stinks.
It does stink. I'll tell you, how many of you guys were at the Wine Bloggers Conference and went to the Carignana tasting?
I was there.
Yeah, so as someone that grew up, my mother would only drink Rioja wine, so, we didn't drink a lot of, even like Ribera del Duero was like prohibited in our house until fairly recently. And so when I tasted the Carignano wine, I was thinking, this isn't going to be able to hold up. But I'll tell you, the relative quality of the Garnacha and the Carignana, the 100-year vine wine, which retails in the U.S. for like $25, all the way down to the entry-level wine, which is $9, I'll tell you what, I'm in love with the Garnacha right now, and $9 is pretty damn good. And there wasn't a wine in that tasting, and there were, I think, 6 wines we tasted that I wouldn't have on a Tuesday night, or Monday night, or Wednesday night. They're not all Saturday night or Friday night wines. They're eminently drinkable, and I think the cheapest one of them goes for $9.99, which means that it was probably purchased at the winery for $1 a bottle. So
that's incredible. That's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
So Rick, I'm going to springboard off of what Jeff was, I think, getting at. When you flip that bottle around, mm-hmm. what does it say? Does it say cellared and bottled by, produced and bottled by? Is that where you were going, Jeff, or?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Because, I know they may bottle on premise, but for what they ship to the U.S., they may bulk ship it, and then it gets bottled here.
Right.
It says bottled in France. It's in French. It's saying it in French, and I know enough French to know what the word bottle is. But it was bottled in France.
So that just means that it costs about a dollar a bottle, maybe $1.50 a bottle for the importer who paid for it at that level, and then paid for the shipping, and then put their big fat margin on it, and selling it for $10.99. It's amazing, by the way. I envy it. I don't put holes at it. I just think it's amazing, and there's some level of power of scale. So they can't be bringing just a few cases of this, so they're bringing a lot of it, so they're getting the benefit of scale.
Yeah. And actually, I mean, to that point, John, the wine shop that I buy from, when she purchases the wine every year, she's buying a pallet just for her store.
Just for her store.
Wow. Yeah.
So how many other stores are buying a pallet just for their store in the States? So they might have half that container ship.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I know that when I was up on the Cape and I walked into this wine store and the entire front end cap was all this wine. And I was like, what are you? Oh, my God, I can't believe you have this. And they were like, well, yeah, we buy a pallet every time it comes in because it's so good.
Well, and it's flip glass, it's screw cap. So, you know, the cogs on it are going to be a lot less than, you know, anything else.
Great point.
True.
Great point. I will say the one of our producers in Croatia, they make one barrel of wine every year, which is, as you guys know, about 25 cases. So we have an annual negotiation now where we negotiate how many bottles we're going to get, not how many pallets or cases, because they can't even fill up a half a pallet. So none of our producers produce enough wine. And because they're mostly small family producers, if they get wiped out one year, the weather sucks a different year, something else happens with mold or mildew or shatter or something, you know, they'll say, hey, last year I know I gave you 50 cases, but this year I've only got 10. So we're kind of dancing around, filling up pallets sometimes with, I've got literally, I'll have 6 bottles of something and then 60 bottles of something and 150 bottles of something else. And the only reason we've been able to survive, I think some months, is that we have the U.S. production where I can just drive up to Oregon with my big SUV and pack in my Vidon and my Youngberg and my Ghost Hill and my Sass and the other wines and bring them down here myself. And I don't have to worry about that really long trip, you know, from Europe that takes almost a month. I can be up and back in 48 hours.
But that's one of the things that you do that so many other wine retailers don't do is you're looking for the small producer, the family producer, and the fact that you're looking in Croatia, to me that was incredibly appealing. And I don't know whether any of the Croatian wines that I just recently bought from you or any of that from that segment that, you know, only makes that little bit. But,
all of them.
But the reality of that is that there are very few stores in most American cities where you can walk into and find Croatian wine. And if you're a wine geek like I am, you want to try it. You have to, you know enough about wine's history that you have to go to Croatia to taste what the beginnings started like.
Yeah,
and so that's a niche for you, and you should be willing to pay for that.
Definitely. Well, thank you. Yes, and we are. And but it's a little bit like being organic, right? There's a penalty to it, which is that, you know, there's not a lot of consistency to the process. And whereas a big importer like, you know, Chambers and Chambers and these companies that do billions of cases, you know, they've got a commitment from a winery for 10,000 cases every year. And they know it's going to taste the same. It's going to look the same. It's going to smell the same. It's going to be the same price. And so that's the easier route. But we actually don't like that. And we said the word blunt for punishment. We just thought we really want to bring wines from people who can't actually access the market. So anyway, it's going to blast. We wait till we bring the Herzegovina wines. That'll make the Croatian wines look mainstream.
There we go. Now we're talking. I can't wait for that. I cannot wait.
I have to taste the wines I got from you. I haven't had a chance to taste them yet.
Yeah. I have mine on a calendar of when I'm allowed to open the first bottle.
Okay,
I just might have to Corvan it before I go to that Croatian tasting in the city.
Yeah, Debbie and I are going to a Croatian tasting on the 26th.
Oh, yeah, you're going to so, yes, there could be some great people there. You guys know Exotic Wine Travel, right? Matthew and Shireen that wrote that book, Cracking Croatia, Cracking Croatian Wine. They're going to be, they'll be there. And then Cliff Rames, who's the editor of Somm Journal, who's also a big expert on Croatian wine, will also be there. So I think you guys will really enjoy that. I couldn't make it out there because I got two trips in New York coming up in the late spring, so I had to prioritize which one I could go to. But that should be a blast.
That's awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I unfortunately can't be there till like the very tail end, because you know, got that day job that actually pays the bills. I'm heading. I'll be there for like the last hour and a half of it, so okay. At least I'll get to taste. Is everybody ready for a riddle? I'm gonna change
sure,
gears here. We ready for a riddle? I'm curious.
Where's your Riddler costume?
Oh, I should get one. Next cut. That will be this mascot, right? I've got Elmo from Wine from Bed Street. You know. All right. So here we go. Ready? It says, I can be quick and then I'm deadly. I am a rock, shell, and bone medley. If I was made into a man, I'd make people dream. I gather in millions by ocean, sea, and stream.
Sam.
Who said that?
John did, I think.
Nick.
I think Nick and I tied.
Ah. Yeah. Yes, sand.
All right.
Good job, John.
All right. I would
give you the full bottle yet.
You know, it's a visual sign of what I feel right now for the fact that you guessed it so soon, but I don't want Lori to have to up the
explicit.
But know that I'm sending you my cooling hand gestures.
Two hands, I would guess, right?
Yes, one for each of you.
Do it like this.
Yeah, as long as it's out of the camera range.
You know what, Jan says Robinson may be an MW, but let's see if she would get that answer correct.
There you go. So what I was thinking is, you know, like, you always have to play a game. There's always got to be a game. So I was thinking the riddle, and if you guys are willing to come back on, you know, whatever you guys can, I want to, you know, how Sunday night football always has, or Monday night football has the running tally of, you know, which announcers have won what. So that's what I thought I would do. But if you guys are willing to come back to another episode, I don't know.
I got to get to 50%.
Oh, yeah. Nick, they both get a point?
They will both get a point for this one, because that was pretty much dead on at the same time.
Well, I'm not good at riddles, so I'll always have a
zero. Yeah, I'm going to suck at this, but I'm here, and I'm ready to go.
Maybe we should be a team.
I don't know.
Oh, that might be good. That might be good. But
I don't think I'm going to help much.
Sand.
That is the answer from now on. I'm Colorado. You know for sand.
So Jeff, you're always really good at coming up with your quote, your movie quote, and your, you know, grape hop or pop that somewhat correlates to the people who come. Maybe I'll start being more, you know, as opposed to just Googling and pulling up the first riddle that comes
up.
I'm
telling you, just Google and pull it up, because after a while it gets to be so difficult.
All right. So I want to thank everybody for coming. I had a blast, and I hope you guys did too. And I just want to give you guys, you know, like a minute to wrap up. You know, this is your time to, you know, promote yourselves, let everybody else know where they can find you, what you're doing, what you're looking forward to in this next week, whatever, you know, 1 minute in the spotlight. And I'm going to go the other way this time, because, you know, that's the educator on me. You can't always pick the same person to go first, you know. So, Rick, that means it's you.
I was afraid of that. Well, I really enjoyed being here tonight with everybody. My blog is Strong Coffee to Red Wine, and my tagline is powering through the day drinking coffee until it's acceptable to drink wine. And I don't know anybody who doesn't agree with that sentiment.
I agree with that one.
Yes. Check me out at Strong Coffee to Red Wine.
Live that sentiment.
You can find me on Instagram at Coffee to Red Wine, on Twitter at Coffee to Red Wine. Lori, this was a blast. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Nick?
So I am at WineComGuy on Instagram, Twitter. My blog is WineComGuy with WSET Diploma right now. There's a lot of drafts, so you're not going to find a lot of posts right now. But yeah, again, at WineComGuy. And also when I'm not drinking this as in my everyday wine, it's probably Dracena, you know, Cab Franc.
Oh, I love you so much.
What a sucker. That's shameless.
And possibly a Syrah Rosé.
Oh, possibly.
Oh,
see, and then you all wonder why I love Nick so much.
Oh, he's just going for points.
I was going to say, he wants bonus points, and Nick, this is what I have to say to you. I'm back up here.
So, Nick, our next House of Pendragon beer on me, buddy.
Nice.
John, what you got?
Well, this really has been a blast. I actually follow all of you guys, so it's actually really cool to see everybody and talk to everybody. I'm at Doppuccino's Vino on Twitter and Instagram. Our e-commerce wine site is doppuccinos.com. Anyone who wants to buy wine, I'll give you a 15% discount, which is essentially most of our markup. So if you put it in Friends15, you'll get a discount on our wines. We just added Marcus wine from Lodi. We actually just added Acquiesce wine from Lodi. We're about to add Bokish wine from Lodi. This weekend I'll put up Sass wine, which makes some incredible Pinot Blanc and Pinot Gris from Oregon. And of course, there's the Spanish and Italian and Croatian wines that we have on the site. Just really be curious and honored if you guys would buy some, taste it, let me know what you think. And anything you don't like, I'll refund your money. That's how I feel on the wine that we sell.
Are you talking to just us, or is this to anyone who's listening?
Well, that's it. Anyone who's listening can, I'll stand by that offer.
Okay. So, and I think you need to spell your website because it's such an interesting name.
Why don't you put it in the chat too?
Well, yeah.
That's a great idea.
You know, for the listeners, not the easiest to guess as
right.
You're typing.
But it will be, you know what, John, in the homepage notes for the podcast, I will put your link in there. And if you want to give me that coupon code again, I'll put that in there if you would like. And on the bottom of the YouTube video in the comments, I will put, all of your social media, all of your websites. I'll have a link to everybody's website on my homepage.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys.
Jeff?
Oh, you want me now?
Lean in, Jeff.
All right. I like sitting back and just absorbing everything. So I'm going to get in podcast mode here, Lori. So hold on. So join us every Friday on the We Like Drinking podcast. You can find it on your favorite podcast catcher app at We Like Drinking. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at We Like Drinking and on Twitter, Lori, at
We Like Drinking One. Why?
Because some college punk kid 10 years ago grabbed We Like Drinking, has posted two times, and has never posted again. I see you, and you make me angry. We drop every Friday morning. You can find the show. We have awesome guests. We've had Lori on the show, winemakers, beer makers, the whole gamut of the drinking universe that we have on the show. I think I'm going to get some of the people around this panel on here on as well in the near future. Hint, hint, wink, wink to all of you that I'm looking at right now. That is where you can find the award-winning We Like Drinking.
Award-winning. And you are also offering a special deal right now, too.
Absolutely. We got all kinds of cool stuff going on right now. If you have ever heard of EcoVessel, they are a insulated product for storing your water, storing your beer, storing your wine. We are giving away two 64-ounce growlers And those come with an infuser, so you can put like lemon in your water. You can brew tea, you can brew coffee, you can do all kinds of stuff with that. You just
you live in California, you can brew other stuff.
So wait a second, Jeff. I listened to that the other day when I was driving to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a podcast player on my Samsung, so I'm not Apple, and I can't figure out how to write a review.
Here's what you do, okay? Because I understand the Apple Podcast application is horrible if you don't have a Macintosh product. Here's what you do. You tweet us something that you like about the show, hashtag EcoVessel in it, I'll put you in it.
Okay.
All right.
And just for the record, even those of us who are Apple, there are those of us that are technically challenged. And I wrote you a review, but I couldn't figure out all the other rules, and so you got the review. There's no Echo Vessel, hashtag, whatever the heck I was supposed to do. But I love your show, and so...
So I was laughing because, Jeff, you kept saying, so Dean, and I knew it was him.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You're in it to win it, and you're in it to win it, so everybody's in it to win it. So, yeah... And also, if you want to purchase an EcoVessel,
which I did,
if you do, yes, you did, and I appreciate that so much. If you use WLD30, you get 30% off your first order from them, and they've got some fantastic products. So definitely check that out. You can find it all at welikedrinking.com,
where you'll never drink alone.
Me and Jerry Lois, thank you.
As you can tell, I don't listen to them at all.
Not at all. I caught a little excited there. I'm sorry.
I even was telling the photographer that's hanging her stuff at the restaurant about the wine bottle thing for the beach.
Yeah.
Oh.
Go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I don't have it in here. Usually I have it in here, but it's also a 750-milliliter bottle shaped like a wine bottle. Comes with a funnel.
Comes with a funnel. I love that.
Yeah.
Collapsible funnel.
Comes with a collapsible silicone funnel. Comes with a cleaner that you can pour a whole bottle into it. Keeps it at temperature for 36 hours. It's crazy.
Yeah. Case.
There is so much wrong with that description. I don't know.
But I shouldn't be asking people to write the review for you, Jeff, because that's just lowering my chances of winning the Echo Vessel.
Okay, write one for Lori as well.
There you go. All right, Debbie, you are up.
All right, I am the Hudson Valley Wine Goddess, and you can find me online at hudsonvalleywinegoddess.com and on Facebook, Hudson Valley Wine Goddess, and I'm HV Wine Goddess on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And I really love this stuff. It's like I get off these type of programs and it's like, I don't know who I am. I'm like, where is everybody? So thank you for inviting me. And if you're looking for Tapping the Hudson Valley, if you're going to visit the Hudson Valley anytime in the near future, go to tappingthehudsonvalley.com and you can look in and purchase my book. It's 1 and 3 day itineraries visiting the craft beverage producers and the sites along the way.
And since Debbie does the calendar, when is our next episode of Wine for Bed
Street? It's next Monday.
Next Monday,
8 o'clock. It's the 19th, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
12 and 7 is the 19th.
Okay. So I need another snow day so I can work a little more.
Yeah. Are we on J?
We are on J.
Jakir, I think it's how you pronounce it.
Jakir. Right, Nick?
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Yeah. And I was still my favorite.
So, everybody, this is Nick. This is how we got Itada. Thanks to Nick. Because I had no clue what an I would be. And, like, boom! After an entire day of drinking at the Wine Bloggers Conference, he's like, I? Itada.
Well, you're like... I said, well, what about ice wine? I'm not doing ice wine. Let's.
Well, because actually that starts with an E.
Hey, not.
Not to the general populace.
No, that's true. E-I-S-W-E.
Sure, ice wine. But if you're in the States, ice wine.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, no.
I've seen, I'm not going to lie, I've seen Finger Lakes, I've seen Finger Lake labels that have it ICE, so.
Yeah, that's just for the U.S. market.
Yes. Well, that's what, yeah.
Well, they have it in Canada, too, I think that way, too, in Ontario.
Yeah. But just, I was so impressed. After a day of drinking, bam, just like that. And I, of course, went home and we joked because I told Debbie, oh, Nick came up with Itada. It's Italy.
and I Googled it. I'm like, Lori, it's Chile. Are you sure it's Italy? Because I Googled it. It came
from Chile. Come on. Itada. All it right. sounds like it should be Italy.
Hey, Lori.
Yes. I would like to thank you all for coming. And I am planning the next episode to be April 23rd. So if you can check into your calendars and see if that works for you. And if you guys have suggestions of what topics you want to talk about, I totally would appreciate it. And Jeff, if you can give me Google Hangout lessons, I totally appreciate that. You know,
let me know when you have your next snow day.
Okay, yeah. Probably tomorrow. Probably tomorrow. But so anyway, thank you very much for joining, and I hope you all can come back on the 23rd. And please shoot me an email. Let me know what links you would like me to put on the homepage, if there's anything else other than your websites and your blogs or whatever that you would like. But I totally appreciate talking to you, and I had a blast. I hope you guys did too.
I did. Cheers, everyone.
Slancha.
Have a great evening.
Slancha, have a great night, guys.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to Dracena Wines Podcast. If you have suggestions of what topics you would like us to discuss, please reach out to us on social media or at dracenawines@gmail.com. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting program you use. To easily subscribe at iTunes, please go to bit.ly/DracenaPodcast. That's bit.ly/D for Dracena and P for podcast. We would greatly appreciate you leaving a review on your favorite system. It helps others to find us. Let's get social. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, YouTube, Google Plus, and Periscope at Dracena Wines. And I am on LinkedIn as Lori Hoyt Budd. Check out our award-winning wine at DracenaWines.com. And remember to always pursue your passion. Slancha!